You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Breaking news tonight. According to cops, a glam mom murders her husband in his sleep, is now whining the judge is ruining her life. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us.
They also find blood on the slats beneath the mattress and a large blood stain on the carpet below the bed. It appears the bedroom had been meticulously cleaned, including bleaching the walls and trying to remove the stain on the carpet.
We know that the parents were arrested last night on no new information. Ms. Gledhill's parents were arrested last night with no new information. And it just feels like everything surrounding her, they're trying to take away. I think that this pretrial protective order is a part of that.
Children of the victim and the defendant, there is some concern about obstruction that has been alleged to have already occurred and involvement with the children specifically. They will be likely witnesses in this matter.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, Your Honor, I think what this all looks like, what the state's currently asking the court to do in a situation where we don't know where dad is, mom's been taken out of the kids' lives, the state is ultimately asking the court to criminalize a mom being able to talk to a third party.
Okay. According to sources, this so-called glam mom, the wealthy mom had, quote, whiskey-fueled sex with her husband and then murdered him the same night after she reveals to him her sex affair with another man. Hold on. Let me get that straight. A wealthy mom has whiskey-fueled sex with her husband, and then she murders him in his sleep after he gets angry over her sex affair. I think I got that straight. And now she's whining the judge has set her life on fire because she's behind bars. It's really hard for me to get my mind around that. How does that all fit in the same sentence? It doesn't make sense. But maybe Alexis Terezchuk, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter, can make sense of it. Do I have that right? Allegations this glam mom has, quote, whiskey-fueled sex with her husband, then murders him the same night in his sleep.
She has said that they had wild sex. She got drunk. She had a bunch of whiskey. She, in fact, couldn't even remember some of the details from the night because she was so drunk. That's what she has said about the night that her husband disappeared, died. That's all she said. They got drunk, and she's fuzzy on the details.
Fuzzy on the details. Alexis Terezchuk, you are happily married, are you not, with one incredible young son. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Now, let me ask you just a quick question. Do you remember the last time you saw your husband?
Yes.
The last time I saw my husband, he was tromping around the house complaining that the internet went down. I even remember exactly what he was wearing. Okay? So how do you get fuzzy about the last time you saw your husband? How does that work?
Well, she's saying that she was so drunk that she can't really remember what happened. She specifically says, I was drinking whiskey. They were together in their home, their $1 million home, by the way, very fancy home, and that they were drinking whiskey, and then she kind of can't really remember anything that was going on.
Okay, before I get to her inconsistent statement with high-profile lawyer Daryl Cohen, former prosecutor turned defense attorney, to Dr. Bethany Marshall, just a toss over to you, Dr. Bethany. Dr. Bethany, why can't rich people be happy? The woman is lounging. She doesn't work. She's lounging in a multi-million dollar home. Bottom value is $1 million. Some people think it would sell closer to $2 million. She's got everything. Why can't she be happy? Apparently a husband and a lover. I don't know if that really makes you happy. But that said, why can't they just shut up and live their wealthy lives and be happy?
Nancy, whether you're rich or poor, the dynamics are the same. Greed, anger, resentment, jealousy, all the emotions that lead to domestic homicide. And you know what I'm also hearing? She is building a defense. We call it malingering, making something up. She's malingering amnesia because she had too much whiskey. She is thinking ahead, Nancy.
Okay, Dr. Bethany Marshall, I hate everything that you just said. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to prove you wrong. Straight out to Tom Smith, former NYPD detective. He is the star of the Gold Shields podcast, the co-host. Tom, how many times, Dr. Bethany is saying, rich or poor, it doesn't matter. That's BS, technical legal term. How many times have you gone into, let's just say, Section 8 housing, and you're looking for a young offender, and you find him at mommy's house, and they have nothing. They have nothing. No furniture, nothing in the fridge, nothing in the cabinets in the kitchen. Nothing. And you're going to bust him for what? Selling dope? Maybe selling a five rock? That's a lot different. In my mind, yes, he's got to be brought to justice. Of course he does. But there's a big difference in that with someone that has nothing, that could arguably have been trying to make a living, albeit completely illegal, as opposed to, let's just say, Ethan Couch, whose defense was affluenza, was so rich and affluent that he should be pardoned when he mows down a group of people, killing multiple people and paralyzing another who had been given everything in his life on a silver platter on top of the Christmas tree. Because I see a difference. I see a difference.
Well, it becomes an entitlement issue, you know, that they can get away with what they're, whatever they're going to do. I'll get past it. I'll talk my way out of it. My high price lawyer will get me off of this. I just have to come up with a good story and an alibi. And that's the mindset going into this. A very pre-planned murder in my mind, starting from the night before and all the way through there. But like I said, it sets up the alibi of the influence and entitlement of what she thinks she has.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, Your Honor, I think what this all looks like, what the state's currently asking the court to do in a situation where we don't know where dad is, mom's been taken out of the kids' lives, the state is ultimately asking the court to criminalize a mom being able to talk to a third party.
To Daryl Cohen joining me now, high-profile lawyer out of the Atlanta jurisdiction, former felony prosecutor, now defense attorney. Daryl Cohen, the way her lawyer is talking, mom is being taken out of their children's lives. The dad is gone. Translation, the dad is murdered and mommy is charged. Why are they making that the judge's fault?
All right, so Nancy, let's face it. She is accused of a crime. She is not yet, if ever, convicted of murder. She has the right of everyone to be presumed innocent unless and until she has been convicted.
That's not even what I'm asking you, Daryl.
It absolutely is.
That's not even what I'm asking you. We're talking about the children. The judge had entered a no-contact order with the children. And you know, Daryl, I know you're on the other side now, but you do remember when there is domestic abuse in the home, the children are kept away from the abuser. Her husband is dead. Just because I haven't been able to find his body doesn't mean he's alive. And the children are under protective custody. Why should they talk to her?
Why shouldn't they talk to her? Unless and until she's
been
convicted.
Because she killed the father, according to the state.
According to the state. I didn't see where 12 men and women said she was guilty. I didn't see where she had pled guilty. I see where she has said, I don't remember what happened. That doesn't mean it's tantamount to being guilty. She has a right to talk to her kids. And more importantly, her kids have the need to talk to their mom and to be with their mom as best they can.
So, Daryl Cohen, are you arguing, which it seems you are, that witness intimidation is not an issue. It would be a cold day in HELL when you were a prosecutor that you would allow an adult charged in a murder talk to potential child witnesses that had possibly seen what happened in the home at the time of the murder.
I would assume, Nancy, the detectives have seen all that they can see, have made their decisions, written their reports, and given video if necessary. And she has a right to see as best she can her kids. She's incarcerated, so she can't visually see them, but she can talk to them, and there's no excuse for her not to be able to talk to them. And Nancy, you and I both know that every call in every court and when you're in jail is recorded. So if she were to try and go off the ranch, they wouldn't hear it, and it would be evidence against her. So your argument just doesn't fly.
Well, this is what the prosecutor, Emily Paulos, has to say.
These children are, in fact, potential witnesses. And the state is, in fact, open to readdressing a no-contact order in the future. Once the investigation is more complete and the children on advice of potentially of a therapist. And I thought I'd be helpful to update you regarding the children's status. So they are currently in DCFS custody with a temporary placement with family. I believe the plan is for the children to start engaging in therapy in addressing the loss of their father and the fact that their mother has been charged with his murder.
I want you to hear what the third district judge, Todd Olson, says.
Ms. Gledhill, for now, and until Judge Mao tells you something differently, ma'am, I am going to order that you have no contact with. So, ma'am, that means no in-person, no telephonic, no electronic contact. Ma'am, if you're released, you may not go near their residence, school. You may not have anyone else contact them on your behalf. And ma'am, while this order is in effect, you may not possess a weapon or ammunition. Ms. Gledhill, do you understand everything I just told you?
Yes.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Jennifer Gledhill tells her lover that her husband yelled at her because he knew she was sleeping with someone else. So that night, when he went to sleep in the bed they share, she shot him in the head. The confidential informant goes on to tell his handlers that after shooting her husband, she put his body in a rooftop storage container, then slid him down the stairs of their home and loaded his body into a minivan. Gledhill told him she had dug a hole somewhere north of their home and buried Johnson's body in a shallow grave. Matthew Johnson is still missing.
Question, how would the CI, confidential informant, know those very intimate details? And if those details are true, would there have been blood evidence to corroborate the CI? What we're looking at is a no-body murder case. That's what's happening right now. And joining me, Dr. Heidi Sievers, renowned certified bloodstain pattern analyst. You can find her online at sieverforensics.com. Dr. Sievers, thank you for being with us. You heard the scenario laid out by a confidential informant. Now, in my world, confidential informants are usually on the wrong side of the law. Okay, so what you're going to need for a CI to be believable in front of a jury is corroboration. Translation, I need blood evidence to support that theory. That theory about a rooftop storage container being slid downstairs and then into the waiting minivan. Now, we've got some corroboration from neighbors that say they observed the car backed into the garage. Is that normal? You know, minivan back ends raise up, okay? So why would you park it in reverse that way? Was there room in the garage? That's a whole nother can of worms. But talk to me about the bloodstain evidence.
Absolutely. So in a situation like this, I would fully expect for there to be bloodstain patterns, whether they're altered, probably from cleanup attempts, but they're still there. If what the informant said is true, we likely would find remnants of spatter. It's very hard to see with the naked eye every single tiny individual droplet of spatter from an impact stain like that, as well as it's a great undertaking to clean up that much blood, especially in absorbent fabrics like the bedding, the flooring, the carpet, as well as the mattress itself and on that bed frame.
Well, a copious amount of blood has been used in other cases to prove a murder. Does the name Jennifer Doulos ring a bell? Listen.
Jennifer Doulos and Fotis Doulos marry in 2004. 13 years later, the couple file for divorce. The circumstances are anything but amiable. Jennifer Doulos files for an emergency order for full custody of their 5 children. Jennifer Doulos told the judge, quote, "I am afraid of my husband. I know that filing for divorce and filing this motion will enrage him. I know he will retaliate by trying to harm me in some way." Fotis Doulos denied all claims, alleging himself that Jennifer Doulos disparaged him in front of the children. The emergency order is denied, and the couple are granted shared custody of the children.
And here comes the blood evidence as it relates to Jennifer Doulos. Another no-body murder. Listen.
When investigators arrive at Jennifer Doulos' home, blood stains are visible not only on the garage floor, but garbage cans and a car parked in the garage. The car in the garage was not the Chevy Suburban the mom was known to drive. Police initiate a search for her vehicle. A little over an hour later, and just 3 miles from the home, officers find the abandoned Suburban by Waveney Park. It contains blood evidence, too. Back at the home, investigators determined someone had tried to clean the concrete floor.
Speaking of blood evidence that we will need to corroborate a confidential informant, a jury's going to wonder, how does the CI know all of these intimate details about the murder unless they did it or they were there? Alexa Tereshchuk joining us, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter. What, if any, is the blood evidence in the case in chief?
There's actually a lot of blood evidence. The investigators went to the home underneath the bed, the marital bed in their bedroom. They moved the bed. On the carpet below it, there was a big stain, huge. They cut it out. On the wall behind the bed, there wasn't blood that you could see, but it had been clearly cleaned very heavily. The whole place, it smelled like bleach, like chlorine. There was also, the box spring was completely missing. And there was the brand new mattress that had just been ordered that arrived 6 days after he disappeared for the first time. But there was lots of blood in the bedroom. They found brown stains on the wall. So the police, the investigators cut out the carpet and took it and sent it to the lab. And the lab came back and said DNA matched, that this is male blood. And they are working to determine, because this case is breaking right now, that they are working to determine if it was his or not. But there was probably not another male in the bedroom murdered.
Another similar case is that of 11-year-old Gannon Stouch. His mother ultimately prosecuted after blood evidence involving a mattress was found. Listen.
El Paso County Sheriff suddenly shift their investigation from a missing person to a homicide when they discover evidence that 11-year-old Gannon Stouch may not be alive. Gannon's stepmother, Letitia Stouch, tells investigators Gannon left on foot for a friend's house and never returned home. But sheriffs find blood spatter on the walls near Gannon's bed, stains on the carpet that bled onto the concrete below, and a large brown stain on the boy's mattress. DNA testing reveals it's Gannon's blood.
Back to Dr. Heidi Sievers joining us, bloodstain pattern expert. Yes, I understand about the blood under the mattress seeping through the carpet. I understand about the blood on the mattress that had to be replaced and a new mattress purchased. The CI is my issue right now. The state has to find a way to corroborate and buttress the confidential informant's credibility. And what the CI is saying specifically, that the dead body of the husband was put in a container. The container was dragged down the steps and put in the minivan. The only way to corroborate that is if you could find, for instance, dragging evidence of the blood showing the body had been dragged somewhere toward the stairwell when the body allegedly was put in a storage container. What would that blood evidence look like?
Great question. We would be looking for, essentially, like you said, a drag pattern, some swiping alterations from where the incident occurred in the bedroom down to that stairwell, and then continuing down the stairs into the garage. Just because we can't see the bloodstains, it doesn't mean that they're not there. There are chemicals to help us find those, regardless of cleaning, regardless of how latent they may appear.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
So, who is this confidential informant that knows so much about the glam mom's sex life with her husband? Who would know that she's having an affair and that that somehow caused the murder of the husband? Listen.
It's a story that sounds like the script for a movie. A police informant tells police he knows that a missing man is actually dead, murdered by his wife. Asked how he could possibly know that Jennifer Gledhill killed her missing husband, Utah National Guardsman Matthew Johnson, the informant tells police that Jennifer Gledhill and her husband were fighting over Jennifer being unfaithful. And after Johnson yells at Gledhill for cheating, she waits until he falls asleep in the bed they share, then shoots him.
So to you, Alexis Tereshchuk, the confidential informant that knows so much about motive for murder is who?
It's her boyfriend. It's the man she's having an affair with. It's the, like, she was accused by her husband. He found out that she was cheating on him, and that's when they got in a fight. That's what she says. So she goes over. The informant tells the police. He contacts the police himself. He's not anybody that is under suspicion. He called the cops and said, she came over to my house, and she told me, well, I killed my husband. And she gave serious details. She said, I shot him. I cleaned the body up. I smashed his cell phone. I drove his truck and hid it away. And then I took his body and I drove north and I buried it in a shallow grave. She confessed this all to him and he called the cops. That was her boyfriend. She was saying to him, you know, when I would tell somebody that I did something like this, I expect you to say to me, hang on a minute, let me get a shovel, I'll go with you. So she really thought that their bond was so strong that he was going to help her cover up this crime. And instead, he went straight to the cops.
Okay, I smell a defense. Joining me, a renowned defense attorney out of the Atlanta jurisdiction, Daryl Cohen. So now I've got the CI, confidential informant. It's actually, and I don't know why Alexis Tereshchuk keeps calling him her boyfriend, like they're in the eighth grade holding hands secretly by the water cooler in middle school. This would be her lover. This would be the guy that's cheating with a married woman. For all I know, he's married too. That's who we're talking about. We already know he's a cheater. So we know that he's going to have a credibility issue in front of a jury. But Daryl Cohen, there's so much more. There's a much bigger problem. They're going to do this at trial. How do I know the boyfriend, as Alexis Tereshchuk calls him, isn't coming forward and blaming her to cover his own tracks? There's her defense right there.
There it is, Nancy, right out in front. He is coming forward. We don't know how vetted he is. We don't know what he does for a living. We don't know if he's a convicted felon. We don't know if he's the greatest guy on earth other than having an affair with a married woman. And as you point out, he may or may not be married. How do we know he has any truth in him? If we find one lie that every other bit of his testimony is questionable. Are you telling the truth now? You didn't? How about this testimony? Is that truthful? You've got to give us more. I don't put any credibility in him at this moment. And as far as he is concerned, he is probably doing everything he can to make sure that I don't get arrested, that I am not convicted. For all we know, she killed her husband, or he killed her husband, or they killed her husband. But he is definitely doing everything he can to not be the fish that's caught. He's wiggling and wiggling and wiggling.
And that's why it's so important. Don't you see this, Tom Smith, NYPD, former detective, that she doesn't get to talk to those children because they were in the home the night that daddy allegedly is murdered in his sleep. So in order to prove she's a killer and not her lover, we have to have an airtight alibi for the lover, because how else would he know all of these details of the murder unless he was there, or did she tell him the details? How do we know he's not involved? And that's how the children can come into play, because they may be able to place daddy alive at a certain time that night. He read me a bedtime story. He did this. He did that. We had supper together. I don't know. But placing daddy alive that night and then alibi the boyfriend. See what I mean?
No, 100%. And, you know, like I just said before, that's the key reason of not letting anyone near these children, because all one of those children need to say is there was a knock on the door, the doorbell rang, and mommy went to the door and talked to a man. And then that's it. And then it goes from there. But confidential informants get in front of crimes. Now, could this have been a conversation that they had at some point of her thoughts of getting out of this marriage by killing her husband and laid out an entire plan to this guy? And then he finds out this happened. Oh, yeah, he's going to run to the police to make sure he doesn't get pointed at or fingered by her having an involvement in this. He may have the knowledge of it, you know, in a planning stage. And then that's the knowledge he has right now. But going to the police is a classic CI move to get in front of being pointed at for a crime.
What more do we know about the lover? We know that it was an alleged sex affair. We know the lover is stating, Alexis Tereshchik, jump in, that the alleged lover is stating the glam mom murders her husband after whiskey-fueled sex when she confesses her affair, or he learns about the affair? Which one?
She told him. I believe that she told him, and he got furious with her, and then she killed him. But she also, to this boyfriend, was sending messages on WhatsApp, which is an app, you know, that's not traceable. It's supposed to be pretty secure. And the boyfriend says, sorry, the lover says that he was taking screenshots of it because she was instantly deleting her messages. So she's texting him all of these details, and he's trying to grab all this evidence to prove that he was not part of it.
Oh, Alexis, this is major, what you're saying right there. That may completely do away with the claim that the CI lover is at fault, is the one who committed the murder. Are you telling me that glam mom, Glethill, was WhatsApping?
Yes.
Her lover?
Mm-hmm.
At the time of the murder?
No, not at the time of the murder. Sorry, after the murder. That's when she was doing it. It was after. She planned. So they, right, remember you said you have three children, that she has three children? She had those children stay at her parents' house the night that her husband disappeared. And then she called her parents the next day and said, oh, can the kids stay another day? So she made sure that those children were not anywhere near there when she killed daddy. And then she drove her to the boyfriend's house, told him, and after that, she kept texting him details about things, really just, so he says, and he says he took screenshots and he showed them to the cops of their conversations, even though she was quickly deleting them after she would write it. So really trying, it seems like, to get him to be part of this cover-up.
Okay, that puts everything in a whole new light. Daryl Cohen, defense attorney, you're going to have to come up with a different defense, because if the lover has screenshots where she's saying, hey, I just shot my husband in the head, now I'm trying to get rid of the body. If he's got that and he goes to police with that, he's in the clear, Daryl.
If once upon a time in the land of Never Never Land, I have made up a story. If he has screenshots, yes. If he is testifying, maybe. If he is testifying, likely not, unless he has hard physical evidence to show that this is what happened. And the fact that
that's pretty hard, Daryl Cohen. I never thought I'd say those words to you, but that's pretty hard, because if he has screenshots of her saying, hey, guess what? I shot him in the head. Now I got to get rid of the body, or any words to that effect, that is bombshell evidence that ruins one of her defenses. So what, in order to blame him, they would have to claim he fabricated those WhatsApps.
That's why whether or not he has a screenshot or two makes a big difference. At this point, we will see, and we just don't know.
We are hearing that there are text messages in addition to those WhatsApps. Listen to this.
Text messages on Glad Hill's phone are leading authorities to believe Matthew Johnson is buried in the location Glad Hill's friend previously described, but Johnson's body has not been recovered. Cottonwood Heights PD are still searching with assistance from cadaver dogs and hopeful the father of three will be located quickly to provide his family with some sense of closure.
So will those text messages prove that the so-called glam mom murdered her husband? And now, in the middle of all of this, let me just say there's no nice way to put it. There's a turd in the punch bowl, a fly in the ointment, as Shakespeare would say. Her parents have been arrested. Listen.
Investigators find a neighbor who says they saw Jennifer Glad Hill's parents at the house cleaning until late into the evening, even though her mother is on record as saying they had only been there for an hour. Jennifer Glad Hill's mother says she purchased a mattress from Amazon at her daughter's request.
Search efforts are still ongoing for the remains of National Guard soldier Matthew Johnson after his estranged wife says she buried him in a shallow grave.
Detectives get a search warrant to search the home of Jennifer Glad Hill's parents. During the search, they find a plastic tote that contained a Glock 19X box wrapped in a child's onesie. The gun container matches the gun model that Glad Hill showed to the man she was sleeping with, who was a confidential informant for the police. Investigators are able to track GPS data for the day Jennifer Glad Hill allegedly killed her husband, and the data reveals she traveled to where her husband's truck was later recovered, and she was caught on camera at a service station cleaning her car.
The arrest of the parents of the so-called glam mom could swing this case. Let me understand something. To investigative reporter Alexis Terezchuk, a plastic tote containing a Glock found wrapped in a child's onesie, that's quite the dichotomy. Was that found in the parents' home?
It was, yes. Absolutely. It was hidden, wrapped inside a child's onesie, you know, like a little sleeping outfit, and in the parents' house, and the police found it there.
Okay, I understand that inside you couldn't see the onesie or you couldn't see the Glock if you just saw the top of the tote. So it could be argued the parents didn't know they were actually concealing a murder weapon, that there was a gun wrapped in a onesie inside of that. But there seems to be more than a Glock wrapped in a onesie. Listen.
It is not against the law to help a family member with cleaning up a house unless you are trying to cover up a crime. That is what police say Thomas Glad Hill and Rosalie Glad Hill were doing when they spent 5 hours cleaning their daughter Jennifer's house. 71-year-old Thomas and 67-year-old Rosalie Glad Hill have been charged with obstruction of justice for helping their daughter clean her million-dollar home after Jennifer Glad Hill allegedly shot and killed her husband while he slept in their bed.
Okay, let me understand what's happening here. To Dr. Bethany Marshall, why is it that after a murder occurs, people suddenly become neatniks? They begin cleaning up. Remember, after Jody Arias murdered Travis Alexander, she cleaned the whole thing up other than the dead body in the shower, but even thought to do the laundry. Whoopsie! She left her digi camera in the laundry and it had a picture of her foot next to Travis Alexander's dead body. That's carrying the cleanup a little too far, right? She forgot to clean up the actual evidence. Why are the parents in this home for over 5 hours cleaning up, coincidentally, right after the son-in-law goes missing?
Well, Nancy, they can't bear the thought of their daughter spending the rest of her life in jail because that is what is going to happen. But I think we're also going to find out that Jennifer Glad Hill has probably been maneuvering against her husband for years, trying to co-opt her parents and her lover into thinking that he's abusive or he's a bad person, or making it seem that it is perfectly reasonable to kill him. And they gladly go along with it. The parents, this is their son-in-law for many, many years. This is the father of their three beautiful grandchildren. They're colluding with their daughter in killing him. And I think we're also going to find out about the CI, the lover, the informant, that this was a part of their fantasy life, that they were going to get rid of him, that he too had been co-opted into the fairy tale, that the husband was abusive and he doesn't even deserve to be alive anymore. And at a certain point when it really happened, and we still don't know his total participation, he had to pull out so that he wouldn't be caught as a co-conspirator in this crime.
Yeah, there's a big difference, Bethany, between your fantasy of having this woman, the glam mom, Gledhill, all to yourself, and finally getting her. I mean, there's the old saying, be careful what you wish for you will surely get it. She's all his now.
Right.
You know, to Dr. Heidi Sievers joining us, bloodstain pattern expert, the mom and dad, and think about it, one is 67, one is 71, and glam mom has landed them behind bars if the allegations are true. I'm sure they did a wonderful job at cleaning her home, but it's really hard to get rid of all the blood evidence.
Oh, absolutely. As good of a job as they think they did in the eyes of forensics and bloodstain detection, they probably did a very subpar job. It's very difficult to obliterate any traces of blood, and they might visually not see any red, brown staining anymore, but it's still there, and our chemicals are strong enough to detect it and tell us that there's something there for further inquiry.
Alexis Tereshchuk, you didn't tell me the parents spent a whole day cleaning up her home.
And they lied about it. They told investigators, because they had spoken with them, they said, oh, we were just there for about an hour, just over at the home. But the neighbors told the police, they said, no, it wasn't just an hour. They were there until 11 o'clock at night. They'd been there for absolute hours. So even the parents are lying to police about what happened. They're lying about it.
They're trying to set everything my client loves on fire. The attorney of the wealthy Utah mom accused of killing her husband angrily lashes out at the judge.
Well, it certainly wouldn't be the first time a parent has been prosecuted for covering up the murder committed by their child. I can't help but remember Crystal Smith, who was prosecuted for washing her son, Aiden Fucci's, bloody jeans after he murdered a teen girl cheerleader, Tristan Bailey.
Aiden Fucci is accused of killing his classmate, 13-year-old cheerleader Tristan Bailey. Police released videos of Fucci laughing in the backseat of a police car, as well as a video showing Fucci's mother, Crystal Smith, washing the blood out of her son's jeans hours after Fucci allegedly murdered Tristan Bailey by stabbing her 114 times.
114 times this little girl was stabbed dead. And mommy washed her son's bloody jeans. Well, she ends up getting prosecuted for that. And then there is the Adel case. Listen.
Dan Markell is murdered in his car at his home in Tallahassee, Florida. Investigators find a bitter custody issue has been ongoing between Markell and his ex-wife, Wendy Adelson. Adelson denies knowledge of anything, but her brother Charlie is caught in the middle of a murder-for-hire plot to kill Dan Markell. Charlie's mother, Donna Adelson, is caught on jailhouse phone recordings discussing the murder, and investigators determine she has been involved in the conspiracy to kill Markell. With Markell out of the picture, Wendy Adelson can move her children closer to their grandmother, Donna Adelson, in South Florida. Donna Adelson is arrested as she is waiting in line to board a flight to Vietnam after buying a one-way ticket to the non-extradition country.
Wow, we're awaiting trial in that case. So, Alexis Tereshchuk, what are the charges against glam mom's parents?
Obstruction of justice. So far, that is what they've been charged with, and they were arrested. These people are in their 60s and 70s, and their daughter, and also the mom and dad had ordered the new mattress. They said, oh, she asked us to get her a new mattress. We ordered it from Amazon. The dad apparently texted her, the police have evidence of this, and said, oh, the new mattress is outside your house, which, while not a crime to buy a new mattress, if they had been there helping clean up the old mattress that was bloody because she shot her husband in it, that is obstruction of justice.
And, you know, Daryl Cohen, the parents could argue, well, she told us it was self-defense, that he was beating her and approaching her with a knife, so she shot him. We don't know what the parents are going to say. They're actually grandparents. But that does not negate intent to cover up a crime. Would that actually work in court?
It would mitigate in court, depending on the attitude of the grandparents, if they testify, depending on their demeanor. depending on their facial expressions, depending on their body language, and depending, most importantly, whether or not they and the jury can get together emotionally. If the jury resonates with them, it can work beautifully. All those poor grandparents are going through all this terrible stuff. It's terrible. Or the jury can say, this is outrageous. I cannot even believe that they would testify. I understand they're feeling terrible for their daughter, but you don't lie. You tell the truth, or you KYD BMS. You keep your damn big mouth shut. And that means you don't do anything.
So Jennifer Gledhill, the so-called glam mom, is accused of murdering her husband after a night of, quote, whiskey-fueled sex. After she confesses her sex affair and he gets angry, how dare he? She shoots him while he's asleep. That's the allegation. Then does a massive cleanup. She gets arrested. The body still hasn't been found, but he's a no-show. He's been gone now for weeks. Not with his children, not going to work, nothing, nada. His vehicle found abandoned. Her children don't have a dad. They don't have a mom because she's behind bars. Her lover has turned against her. And both of her parents have been arrested on felony charges. Yet this mom, it's all me, 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 me. She actually says the judge is torching, setting a fire, everything in her life. If you know or think you know anything about this case, including the whereabouts and the movements of the so-called glam mom, Jennifer Gledhill, or the location or the whereabouts, the movements of her husband's vehicle, dial this number, 801-840-4000. Repeat, 801-840-4000. The investigation is still very much active. Thank you to all of our guests for being with us, but especially to you. Nancy Grace signing off. Good night, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.